Zen teacher Eve Marco, the widow of Bernie Glassman, recently wrote on her blog an account of how she decided to start taking antidepressants. And she describes how she, for a long time, resisted the very idea of it, resisted acknowledging the various symptoms of depression that she was experiencing, the difficulty getting up in the morning, the lack of energy or enthusiasm for her ordinary tasks, a sense of the meaninglessness of things. And she describes how at first she tried to do all sorts of other things on her own. Doubling down on her practice, her work. She's involved in numerous social activism causes and participates in many sorts of demonstrations, including continuing to carry on Bernie's trips to Auschwitz and things like that. And so there's no shortage of things to keep her busy, or invitations to give talks and demonstrations to join and so forth. And at first, you know, her inclination is to throw herself into that. But the depression persisted. And she tried to remind herself of all the things she had to be grateful for. She tried to practice in that way, with reminding herself of her health and all her capacities and the support of her students and her sangha and all the people around her. But little by little, the things that she was trying to do to support herself slipped over into sort of practice-oriented self-reproaches. After all, you're a Zen teacher. Can't you handle this? Isn't your practice enough? Is there something wrong with your practice? And eventually, she had to come to a certain realization that despite all these decades of practice, all her experience, when it came to depression, she was just like everybody else. She had lost her husband. That mourning, that grief was not resolved. That loneliness was not resolved. Something else was going on. And so at some point, allowing herself to step outside the role of teacher and even step outside of the role of a Zen practitioner, she allowed herself to say, I'm just like everybody else. If I need help, I should get help. Which in the end is a very courageous and admirable position for her to arrive at, and I'm glad she was able to write about it publicly. The dilemma for many people who practice is that they get to a point where not only does their practice not help them, but they don't know how to recognize the points in which the practice itself is part of the problem. Eve describes sort of a reaction of trying to throw herself into more activities of helping, of paying attention to others' needs as a way of trying to get over herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is depression except a kind of preoccupation with the self? Shouldn't the antidote be to take better care of others? Pay attention to how other people are feeling. Pay attention to the greater needs of all the poor and traumatized people around you that you work with. Well, the problem with that is that that becomes a vehicle for really minimizing or repressing your own vulnerability and neediness. And it's not just a failed solution, but it actually exasperates the problem, because we can say that that kind of depression is a result of some basic emotional needs not getting recognized, not being attended to it in time. And, you know, I've called that particular syndrome trying to save all beings minus one. It's unfortunately endemic in Buddhist communities where when for one reason or another, a person's emotional needs and difficulties are not addressed, their teacher or their community or practice seems to encourage them to double down on ignoring them and practice harder in a way that means concentrate on something else. Put all your attention into work. Put all your attention into the meticulousness of form, or attending to other people, and it all goes exactly in the wrong direction. And some of this, I suppose, inevitably is a gendered problem. And that women are particularly encouraged to attend to the needs of others rather than themselves, to see practice as compassionate caretaking, to be other-directed, not to be selfish. All the ways women's needs in the greater society are thwarted. All that can get played out within the language of Buddhism without much change. And we have to be very alert not to allow practice to collude with that kind of repression or dissociation of emotion. Corresponding practice neurosis for men is the valorization of autonomy, imperviousness, imperturbability, right? The extirpation of vulnerability and neediness in the name of practice. And people can go a long way in that direction and for a long time look very strong and self-controlled and powerful up to a point, in the point where it gets brittle. And unfortunately, the typical breaking point for male teachers is that they turn to an affair with one of their students as a surreptitious way to allow their emotional needs to come out and to get any attention for the human side of them, which they've been repressing in the name of practice. I've seen both of these sort of gendered outcomes, both the female and male version of this, play out with a number of teachers I can think of over the last few decades. And it's the kind of thing that we have to learn to recognize as a kind of built-in danger to this practice. It's the characteristic ways it can go awry. If you're going to use or prescribe any kind of medicine, you want to be very aware of the side effects. And you want to keep an eye out for them when they show up. Know what they are. Well, this kind of practice, like everything else, has ways in which it can go well or badly. Inevitably, people are going to try to make practice collude with the particular character issues they bring to it. At one level, practice is here to erode those characterological organizing principles. And at some level, that can go on behind the scenes, and we can count on that happening. But if we're not careful, there are all sorts of covert ways in which practice can collude with that, collude with neurotic self-effacement, collude with neurotic feelings of becoming invulnerable and not needing anyone, not being dependent or reliant. These are the ditches on the two sides of the path of practice that we should never forget about. And we should only be grateful when a teacher like Eve is able to be honest about her own experience with falling into one of those ditches and seeing what it takes to come out of it.